Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media to just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P.
Jump on your bike, let's hit the road.
Come on.
Fuck the 5-0, man, we out of control.
Hey.
A bad motherfucker, riding through the night. A filthy motherfucker, and I love to fight. Picture me rolling on my chopper on red. No love for the other side, no need to be friends. Hit the gas, homie, you gotta keep on pushing. Got an out, cheer, check the dose, and need an ass. Put the ticket at the ticket, man, I ain't gonna pay. Better do 30 days, locked up in CJ. Twist the throttle, let's hit the rolling. My drag pipes on my bike, get the blowin'. A third motherfucker street calling me. Like a mom calls the kids when it's time to eat.
Come
approach me, homie, like the shit all good. I'm like half the motherfuckers that live in my hood. I'ma continue rolling to the mode. Put 10 in the clip and 1 in the hole. Fuck what you heard, homie, I'ma always hit a bar. My homeboys my rubber, but we never ever fall. At the end of the day, we can always stand tall. The gov don't like me, yo, fucking well. I guess you can call me the angel from hell.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. Just craziness. Trying to get here on time.
Tell me about it.
Uh-huh.
Been crazy since Monday. Hasn't stopped. Non-stop madness.
Really?
Yeah. What?
I said, really?
Yeah. It's cool, man. It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Tough, kicking my ass, but hey, what are you gonna do?
Much as you can.
So what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Stater went out while I was riding, and then I had to get picked up to the shop, take it apart, wait for the part to come, then put it together. All kinds of shit going on today.
Sounds like lots of fun.
Yeah, and then I had Bill going, fuck, I owned the place and I can't even get my bike fixed. he was just busting my balls. Yeah.
That's so fun.
But other than that, nothing else. Just he started acting up on the way home. So I knew what it was right away.
Huh.
Just tried to nurse it. Yeah, I just tried to nurse a little bit so I didn't lose the motor.
Yeah. So, how long is it going to take to get fixed, do you think?
It's already fixed. I rode it home. That's why I was a little late.
Oh, that's okay. I thought it's because you had to get a ride home from the shop. My bad. That's cool.
Yeah. So, all right, go ahead and read your thing.
Oh, wait a minute.
What I'm going to say is today is the first day of the Suns, so what I'm going to do is at 6:54, I'm going to play the last song, and then we're out of here. No two-hour show tonight because I'm going to watch the premiere.
Okay, because I got it set for DVR, but that's cool.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the title of this article was called, Is Google Making Us Stupid? What the internet is doing to our brains. And it starts off with an excerpt from the movie of 2001, A Space Odyssey. So with anything that goes, I'm about to read. Here we go. It says, Dave, stop. Stop, will you? Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? So the supercomputer Hal pleads with the implacable astronaut David Bauman in the famous and weirdly poignant scene towards the end of Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. Bauman, having nearly been sent to deep space death by the malfunctioning machine is calmly, coldly disconnecting the memory circuits that control its artificial brain. Dave, my mind is going, Hal says foreignly. I can feel it. I can feel it. I can feel it, too. Over the past few years, I've had an uncomfortable sense that someone or something has been tinkering with my brain, remapping the neural circuitry, reprogramming the memory. My mind isn't going, so far as I can tell, but it's changing. I'm not thinking the way I used to think. I can feel it most strongly when I'm reading, immersing myself in a book or a lengthy article that used to be easy. My mind would get caught up in a narrative or the turns of an argument, and I'd spend hours strolling through long stretches of prose. That's rarely the case anymore. Now my concentration often starts to drift after two or three pages. I get fidgety, lose the thread, begin looking for something else to read. I feel as if I'm always dragging my wayward brain back to the text. The deep reading that used to come naturally has become a struggle. I think I know what's going on. For more than a decade now, I've been spending a lot of time online, searching and surfing and sometimes adding to the great databases of the Internet. The web has been a godsend to me as a writer. Research that once required days in stacks of periodical rooms of libraries can now be done in minutes. A few Google searches, some quick clicks on hyperlinks, and I've got the tailgate facts or the quote I was after. Even when I'm not working, I'm as likely as not to be foraging into the web's info thickets, reading and writing, emails, scanning headlines and blog posts, watching videos and listening to podcasts, or just tripping from link to link to link. Unlike footnotes, to which they're sometimes linked, hyperlinks don't merely point to the related works. They propel you towards them. I'm not the only one. When I mention my troubles with readings to friends and acquaintances, literary types, most of them, many say they're having similar experiences. The more they use the web, the more they have to fight to stay focused on long pieces of writing. Some of the bloggers I follow also have begun mentioning the phenomenon. Scott Kopp, who writes a blog about online media, recently confessed that he has stopped reading books altogether. I was a lit major in college and used to be a voracious book reader, he wrote. What happened? He speculates on the answer. What if I do all my reading on the web? Not so much because the way I read has changed. I'm just seeking convenience, but because the way I think has changed. Antidotes alone don't prove much, and we still await the long-term neurological and psychological experiments that will provide a definite picture of how Internet affects cognition. But a recently published study of online research habits conducted by the scholars of the University College London, suggests that we may well be in the midst of a sea of change in the way we read and think. As part of the 5-year research program, the scholars examined computer logs documenting the behavior of visitors of two popular research sites, one operated by the British Library and the other by the UK Educational Consortium, that provides access to journal articles, e-books, and other sources of written information. They found that people using the sites exhibited a form of skimming activity, hopping from one source to another and rarely returning to any sources they'd already visited. They typically read no more than one or two pages of an article or a book before they would bounce out to another site. Sometimes they'd save long articles, but there's no evidence that they went back to actually read it. The authors of the study report, it is clear that the users are not reading online in the traditional sense. Indeed, there are signs that new forms of reading are emerging and users power browse horizontally through titles, contents of pages, and abstracts going for quick wins. It almost seems that they go online to avoid reading in the traditional sense. The human brain is almost infinitely malleable. People used to think that our mental meshwork, the dense connections formed along the 100 billion or so neurons inside our skulls, was largely fixed by the time we reached adulthood. But the brain researchers have discovered that that's not the case. James Old, a professor of neuroscience who directs the Kranznow Institute for Advanced Study at George Mason University, says that even the adult mind is very plastic. Nerve cells routinely break old connections and form new ones. The brain, according to Olds, has the ability to reprogram itself on the fly, altering the way it functions. The internet promises to have particularly far-reaching effects on cognition. In a paper published in 1936, a British mathematician named Alan Turing proved that a digital computer, which at the time existed only as a theoretical machine, could be programmed to perform the function of any other informational processing device. And that's what we're seeing today. The internet, an immeasurably powerful computer system, is subsuming most of our other intellectual technologies. It's becoming our map and our clock, our printing press and our typewriter, our calculator and our telephone, and our radio and our TV. I'm haunted by the scene in 2001. What makes it so poignant and so weird is that the computer's emotional response to the disassembly of its mind, its despair as one circuit after another goes dark, its childlike pleading with the astronaut, "I can feel it, I can feel it, I'm afraid," and its final reversion to what can only be called a state of innocence. Hal's outpouring of feeling contrasts with the emotionless that the characterizations, the human figures in the film, who go about their business with an almost robotic efficiency. Their thoughts and actions feel scripted as if they're following the steps of an algorithm. In the world of 2001, people have become so machine-like that the most human characteristic turns out to be a machine. That's the essence of Kubrick's dark prophecy. As we come to rely on computers to mediate our understanding of the world, it has our own intelligence that flattens into artificial intelligence. Pretty deep, no?
Yeah.
We're becoming stupid. We're becoming stupid by spending more and more time online. We're no longer reading. We're used to only reading on phone screens, Kindles, laptops, things like that. And it's a, you know, we talk about how we breed an ignorant society. Well, you know, the computer generation is so gung-ho, and they're not putting all these things, you know, right out at the forefront.
I read 50 to 100 articles a day. How do you think I do that blog?
Well, yeah, exactly. But, I mean, when you read the articles, do you read the whole thing, or do you, like they mentioned, just skim through it?
No, I have to read the whole thing. Do you know why?
Because you're publishing it.
There you go.
Okay, that makes sense. But a normal person, any day of the week, would just skim through it. And if it kept, like, look at Facebook. If a lot of the articles that are posted by people, if they actually took the time out to read some of them don't even make sense. I believe the title is catching their eye, and they're not reading, like, beyond that.
Yeah.
And
I'm reading one right now where it says Iowa issues public gun permits to the blind.
Well, that's just like, check this out. In Michigan, when I was living there, right, we were hunting. And believe it or not, we had a blind friend. And the laws for people who are blind in Michigan, they're the only ones that can carry a crossbow. And they can hunt with a partner, because the partner can tell them what degree to aim the crossbow. But anybody else cannot hunt with a crossbow.
Right.
So our friend, needless to say, was an avid collector, and he also shot, too. You know, he'd take the shotgun out when we were target shooting, and he'd have a ball like that because we could help him. But he never went out in the field hunting deer with a shotgun. He always had the crossbow. But anybody else, you're getting in trouble.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm reading this right now where they blind people shotguns. Guns.
You know, I mean, to a person who was born blind, that all they know, I don't think I'd have a problem putting a shotgun in their hand. To somebody that maybe came blind later in life and maybe doesn't have all the senses that a person blind at birth does, I don't know, I'd be leery about that. You know, because when you're born blind, you're used to adapt to the dark and any little noise, scent. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes that has a way of tripping you out when you're halfway through life and all of a sudden you lose your sight. Like,
yeah.
Until,
well, did you know that, just not to change the subject, but right off the United States has their fleet over there. Russia's sending theirs. And now China's sending NERS. Why is China sending NERS?
This whole thing is, I've been preaching to my nieces and nephews for years, to watch out when it comes, Russia and China are going to be in cahoots. And it's exactly panning out exactly the way I said. And these young kids look at me like I have three heads, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, my grandmother lived till she was 95. She was very politically active. I have a family that has, how do I say, a news addiction. And, you know, you learn about things in life by watching things happen over and over again, and you know who the players are. And they ain't nobody powerful enough to go up against Russia and China except for us. And right now, we're in a hurting fucking state. We need to just stop that bullshit, is what we need to do. Did you see video footage of the bikes going to Washington? I seen some today.
No, I got a. Hang on a minute. I got a call to action from, where is it? Oh, right here. This is from my friends at Bikers Against Discrimination, but it's 2 million bikers cruising through D.C. on 9/11 despite not being issued the permits.
Yeah, I know. I know that they weren't issued the permit, but there's still bikes en route. Yeah, because that's what it said on the video post.
I got that today. And it's like they came back and said, we don't need our stinking permit. We have a constitutional right to ride, and we shall ride.
Yes, that's, you know, you have the right to gather peacefully, right?
Yeah. No, they're pissed because the Muslims applied for a permit and were approved without hesitation.
Yeah, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
I know you know it. I know it. People listening didn't know it.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. It's crap because, you know, I mean, people can gather and express their opinions without violence and telling people that they can't go to Washington on 9/11 is a smack in the face. They have the right to gather and be heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the judge today that they almost shut down the surveillance program for the catching terrorists.
Mm. Well, you know, I had posted my thoughts about 9/11 today and put up some pictures on Facebook, and I had a couple of people that just weren't happy with that, and they expressed their opinions, and I expressed mine back, and those images haunt me. I was watching it as it was happening. My son was just learning how to sit up. He was beginning to sit up when all this was taking place, and, you know, those images, as much as they upset me and different things will trigger different things, I don't ever want to forget that. Ever. I don't care how horrific it bothers people. It bothers me, too. It bothers me a great deal. But those images will never, ever leave my head, ever. And, well, I mean, those planes took off right out of Boston over here. They had this whole area in complete fucking chaos, ripping it up one side and down the other. And it was just, you know, I understand we weren't in New York, but, like, every extra man we had from these, you know, the city and the small town were up there, you know, one of the food trucks.
My friend Bernie and the county boys, they all went back east.
Yeah. The food truck came out of one of the littler towns in Rhode Island. They went up there and they were serving coffee and soup and all kinds of shit, and they just ran it nonstop 24 hours a day, and that was no charge. They were feeding all the people that were doing that stuff, and local businesses and stuff were donating all kinds of stuff to them. They did a small little story on them down here, you know, and they were pretty humble about it. They were, like, just doing what they would do for anybody, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, that night where I used to work is right down on the waterfront and you can see outside billions and billions of stars because there's no lights. There's no city lights. It's like a street light every mile and a half. Real dark, winding, rich area. And the only thing that went by, like every 15, 20 minutes, were two fighter jets side by side scanning up and down the East Coast. And it was the creepiest feeling not to see planes going by or anything going on, but you would hear that. I don't know if it was like a boom, whatever sound they make because they're loud, going overhead, you know, and that shit that just stays with the person. I mean, regardless, I wasn't in New York, and I can't even imagine what them people went through, but just the little things that we all went through down here, it affects people.
All right, well, hold on a second. Somebody might want to ask you about that. Hello, 870.
Hello. I don't even know who you've got on. This is Amy White. I was asked to call in tonight, and I had just stepped in the door of the motel. So I'm here.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we just, Amy, you were going to be on, what, an hour before me or an hour after me?
Me, probably an hour after you.
Yeah. Well, I was a little late today. The stator went out on my bike, so I got a late start tonight. But,
My shows don't have a special time. I'm not as big as you are. So I do it when I get a minute. I just got to Washington, so I ain't even caught my breath, darling.
But you went on the ride, the two million ride, right?
Yes, sir. I'm not doing the 2 million. I'm doing the 2,000.
Okay.
But I am here in Washington, yes.
What was the reception like?
I just now rolled into town. I had all of my Arkansas people were here at the motel. Looks like quite a few people here at the motel. From what I'm seeing, we're going to have a success tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I just got here, but there's bikes on the road. There's trucks and cars on the road with the flags and the bikers on the windows, and it's looking really awesome.
Good.
I still got people from Arkansas coming in. The last of my people will be in probably about 3 o'clock this morning. And I will end up in my group bringing, I think, about 40 people, and it's two-thirds
uh-huh.
female.
Oh, cool. Stacey, do you have any questions?
Well, I'm just checking in with y'all and telling y'all I made it, and I appreciate what y'all been doing.
You're welcome anytime. If you want to call back Thursday, about 6:15 or something. Yeah, and let us know what happened.
I will. I guess what I want to tell y'all, I canceled
mm-hmm.
chemo today to be here. I've been in my car. I had to go to a funeral in Minneapolis, back to Arkansas, and then here. I've been in my car through like 18 states for an entire week straight, but I did it to be here for my country. And
uh-huh.
I did it to stand up for what I think is right. I don't think it's right what's going on 9/11. And I hope that this makes a difference. And I just wanted to check
yeah.
in and tell y'all the 2,000 are here, and we're ready to roll in the morning.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's it. It is
and,
awesome.
Y'all have an amazing night, and I love y'all. And I'll check back in. I'm dead, baby. but I will check back in with you when we got more time, and I'm not so wore out.
Yeah, get some fluids and relax. Put your feet
yeah,
up sure. once.
Well, you know, we're all scared. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know if I'm going to arrest you. I don't know if it's going to be like Boston. We're on edge because we
mm-hmm.
don't know what's going to go on. And that's a lot of it with all of us right now. After this is over, I'll call and let you know what our people do, okay?
Okay, perfectly. Thank you.
All right. You have a wonderful night.
That was Irene.
Wow.
She's in D.C.
Yeah.
40 people, 40 people and two-thirds women. Unbelievable.
But you know what? She's stating a fact that everybody's a little bit on edge. People don't know what's about to happen. And, you know, they're taking a stand for what everybody should be, you know, definitely taking a stand in, you know. And them people, they're putting themselves out there. And they've got all the respect and gratitude for me every step of the way. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Me too. I mean, I hope she didn't try and call earlier because nobody was here, but I'm glad she called back. But
yeah,
I thought I heard her. I
I thought I heard her say they just got in.
Yeah, that's what she did say. It was tough to make out some of what she was saying, but yeah, she had just said that they had just rolled in from, like, what, 18 hours on the road, something like that. That's crazy. And they need to have their rest, too, to make sure their wits are about themselves tomorrow, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No, I wish them nothing but luck. And I hope that everything just goes smoothly.
Me too. We'll find out tomorrow because I got Hank McGrath is there with a bunch of other bikers, and they're supposed to check in with us Thursday too and let us know what's going on.
Okay. Cool.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. It's like I said. If you just sit back and wait, you're never gonna get anything.
That's for sure. That's like I came to a decision this week, and you know, it's not to deter from the fact, but it's to go with what you just said. I've got money put aside, which, like, I've talked to you about it, for a bike, and I'm letting the bike go, and I'm getting my food truck, and we're gonna park it over here in my mother's yard, and we're going to gut it and strip it and modify it and do everything that needs to be done while I'm in school. So as soon as I get out of school, it's rock and roll. And like my best friend said, she's like, you know, if you succeed, she said, you might have two Hollies at the end of the year. She says, if you don't, then at least, you know, you
get right.
A try. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm going to go for broke and just, you know, because you got to have the dream before you have the toys. And, you know, this is the opportunity. And I don't think I can pass on it, you know. So that's what will be happening in the next year. And don't worry, I'll be posting pictures of the befores and the afters and all the chaos in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would like to eventually have two trucks and the other one to be strictly cupcakes, a dessert truck and a food truck. I think that would go over quite well.
Good. Good. Hey, yeah, it's that first step.
Yeah, I've been banking, and it's like, you know, it's taken me some time to get where I need to be. And God only knows, I'm going to be 45, and I got the money, and I'm just going to friggin' do it up, you know, and that'll be that. We were out here this weekend on the back deck having a cookout. We were grilling sirloins and grilling little necks and all different kinds of things. We were having a mass conversation about, you know, what would be on the truck and everything else, and it was pretty in-depth, so we're brainstorming, and, you know, I think it'll happen.
Yeah, the topic about the food?
Well, I want to go organic, you know, or as close to healthy as possible. You know, you're not going to find burgers and hot dogs on my truck, you know, and that's the tougher side of the equation, is being able to get something quick, easy, and healthy. So we're brainstorming. It'll come together, and you know. And another thing too is food safety. I was thinking fresh seafood, but then those food trucks get hot, you know. So it's really going to be a little bit tricky to come up with the perfect menu, but I'll pull it off. It'll be okay.
Good. Good. So who's going to help?
Well, my brother's on board, my best friend, her husband, myself, my son, and my nieces, Patices, you know,
mm-hmm.
And we'll do it. It'll work. You know, because there's definitely a lot of places that I can take it to and everything else in this area. So, you know, and the food trucks that are around here now are basically fast food. They're not, you know, it's like going through McDonald's. That's pretty much what you're getting. So I'm hoping like with having that type of truck, it'll fly. Things will be good.
Good. Good.
And a rest for the wicked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where is everybody tonight? Where's Chicago? Where's...
They're all waiting
the
for the show.
In Boston. Was I the only smart one that, like, DVR'd it? When I get off this, I'm going to finish up my homework, and then when I'm done with that, I'm going to go upstairs and watch it. I will have watched it before the night's out. But my homework's intense.
They're going to have an after Anarchy afterward. And then
that's all right.
Yeah.
And not only that, with the on-demand, I can re-go through all those episodes, too. So, not worried.
No. I'm not worried either.
No, you never worry about anything, do you? Mr. Calm, Cool, and Collective. I think Bill would argue with me on that.
Nah. He would kind of like, hey, you're going to make the show? Hey, you're going to make the show? Hey, you're going to make the show?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Hello, Frank.
Well, good evening. I just caught the last 15 minutes or so. And
it's Friday.
Well, so far they've been treating me well. Last time I was on, every 15 minutes, I had to reconnect so that I could even catch dribbles of the show. And if it weren't the fact that I was doing things and trying to listen at the same time, I would have been on the phone instead. It was, they obviously have my number. And I'm not sure what that means, but they don't like me. Now, I did hear about the fantastic Rolling Thunder truck. And since you're cooperating on different foods and you're thinking healthy, one of the big things you may want to try and incorporate is the gluten-free food.
Yeah, I want to do, have two menus, one, like, organically healthy, or, like, as healthy as I can get it, and I'd like to do a gluten-free menu, too, because there's so many people that have allergies to gluten, it's not even funny.
Well, it's interesting because more and more, I work with someone who has that type of a dietary restriction.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'll come across something that says gluten-free, and I'll buy it for her as a treat. But I'll tell you something, it's tough to find things. And things that taste good, I mean, I asked her one day, I said, what could be in chicken broth to make that non-gluten-free? It's a liquid.
Right.
When you actually read it, it's because they use it as a thickener, even though it's a clear thickener. And it's like, what do you need that for?
Yeah, it's in, like, almost everything we buy. It's crazy. But it's in there.
I see. If I'm not mistaken, it's even in the sodas, too. It's like, wow.
That's a nasty little ingredient.
Yeah, sure.
But you have to, you know, and that's the thing with me giving up the dream of the bike and buying the truck. I'm in school for culinary now, and by the time it all comes together, you know, I'll have more education under my belt and more of what exactly all the cooking processes are, you know. And I'm just going to go day by day, but like I told Phil, I've got to do the dream before I can do the toys. So I'm going to go for it, and that's going to be it.
Well, you know, because of the determination, it's going to work. It is a dream in progress.
Yeah, a couple of my friends have told me that because they've said to me that I've got to drive like nobody's business. When I'm determined about something, I go like 110% in, and I've been talking about it now for like a year, and it's slowly but surely, you're right, it's going to come together because my determination is going to put it together. I just would like to leave a little something for my kids, you know, whether it be to take over the business, work for the business, or cash in when I die, you know. But I want them to be proud of something, you know, something they can tell stories about and stuff. So, you know, it's just one of them things.
Well, but you know what? At the age and the determination is something that our younger youth don't have. So if they take nothing away from this, and I'm not just talking about your kids, I'm talking the youngins out there, then
yep.
The most important thing of all is you've got to put things into perspective. And like you said, it's hard to give up something that you love, again, which is the motorcycle. However, the greater dream of being an independent owner with offering something that the other venues are not doing, that's a big jump. And not only that, it's one in which is needed, and you're going to succeed at it.
Yeah, and we've got, like, so many areas around here that are kind of like oxy-fotsy, like Newport, Rhode Island, and different things like that, where people are really into that style of eating. And, you know, it's not just because people have asked me, you just want to do that? And I said, no. I'm like, you know, I want to get into the poorer sections of town, too, and show them that healthy eating can be good, you know, because that's how you inspire people to change their habits. So it's not that I just want to cater to the rich around here. I want to reach all walks of life, you know. If I can change one person's eating habits, then I feel like I've accomplished my goal.
At that point, you're also going to have to look at the diabetes aspect of it.
Yeah.
Of course. What I find interesting is trying to branch out into that type of food and so forth. I find it fascinating in the respect that whatever you learn, I commend you.
Oh, thank you.
However, what you learn from talking to individuals that live it, you will grow faster.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Fran, it's funny because some of the younger kids in my class, because I go to school during the day, so predominantly that's the younger crowd fresh out of high school, they're always very intrigued with me because I don't say much, but when I say something, you know, I'll carry on for a minute or so because I've got the life experience. And most of my knowledge comes from talking to people. You know, the way I've gathered information my whole life is conversations down the coffee shop. I've learned many things. You'd be surprised, you know, but it's the truth. You have to talk to people. You have to get a feel for your surrounding, a situation or anything. And people have to stop being afraid to communicate.
Well, also, stop passing the buck and let the doctor give you a drug to take care of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
I agree.
I have been told that I'm diabetic. Okay. So I'm dealing with it. Two, I had a dispute with my doctor. He only wanted to give me 2 test strips. I was like, excuse me? 2 test strips? That's not going to tell you anything other than you're either on or you're off.
Yeah.
That's all it's going to do. So I requested 8 a day, which is not an unusual request. I'm sorry.
No, it's not.
I find out from the nurse the reason he did 2 is because they said that that's all the insurance would pay for.
Oh.
Well, wait. I called the insurance and said, is this so? And they said, well, who told you that? And I said, the nurse. He says, by no means. So guess what? This is where if it is dealing with your own personal health, then you better take charge of it, and you better understand what it is you're taking and how much you're taking. Because my friend that's gluten-free, her
yep.
sister's in the hospital, and they haven't been giving her all her meds. And then they labeled her a neurotic, and I'm waiting to see if it's in the actual form, because if it is, that hospital's going to be sued. But they put her down as a neurotic, and then they said to her, "Well, you're supposed to be well aware of what you're taking. It's your responsibility. It's your medicine." And it was like, "Oh wow!" And you're in the hospital without your medicines because they don't want you to have your medicine. So talk about a catch-22.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah. It goes right back to the medical. It goes back to what we're eating. And if anyone out there is told that they're diabetic, you better be testing at least 8 times a day. Because without doing that, you're not going to know what's causing your sugar spikes.
No, that's the truth. When I first became diabetic, because type 2 diabetes, but my diabetes has been in like a remission state for the past, I don't know, 3 years, I guess. And it's the truth. When I first became diabetic, I didn't know what spikes my sugar is. I'd be high, I'd be low, I'd be all over the place. And you need that meter. You need to know what's going on, you know, until you get where you need to be. And I can't stress that enough with people.
I mean, that's number one. I don't care what the doctors and all that say. In fact, I've even had fights way back when Dad was first diagnosed as diabetic. And I had a fight with the dietitian. And then the head of the department calls me and says, "Oh, we're sorry. She was just doing a general dietitian. It wasn't for a diabetic diet." And it was like, well, that was pretty stupid, isn't it? Considering that's what we were there for.
Wow.
And the food. Well, that here we go back to. You better know what it is that you need to do and required to do. Because if you trust the hospitals and your own physician, then you might as well start digging your grave with a spoon, because every day you better be taking at least 10 scoops out, because that's where they're going to put you. I know that doesn't sound really nice or whatever, but that's reality. In fact, I have to talk to our friend Phil's lawyer, because I want to send him some things. Because I think I'm going to ask him to go after the hospital. Because when John was in the hospital, when we went to the ER, when you give the nurses in the ER a directive, such as, "You call me, I'm at the restaurant in the hospital, and I'll be right here," they decided to override that and accept my husband's okay to go have the CAT scan. Which at that point, he had already been given 3 different pain medicines and had already started hallucinating, because I had already told the nurse he was hallucinating. And the asshole of a nurse says, "Well, do you know which drug it is that's causing it?" "Well, I don't know. You just gave him 3 different pain meds. It could be any one of those." That's what you're dealing with today. And they went against what is actually legal. They had no right to take him for that test unless I was there. And I had never left the hospital. And if anybody out there thinks that they're in trouble, then they better have somebody from the outside checking what's going on. If you don't, you're dead. And I think it's cute. They're calling these nursing homes SNF now, because nursing homes have received such a bad connotation. So they're calling them SNF. It's some kind of acronym for whatever. It's still a nursing home. It still smells. And the care still sucks. Unless you're the president and is receiving top dollars, you're not going to get that kind of care. Your bedpan, you might be sitting on it for an hour. And I've seen that, too, working in the hospital. And I mean, I know you've seen it too. But it takes advocates and anyone out there that wants to be an advocate for someone in the hospital, please take up that gauntlet and do it. Because there's people out there that need advocates. Not the hospital advocate for inpatients. I'm talking outside. You've got to have them. But on that lighter note, I can't wait to see your menu. I may have to ride cross country just so I can eat off your truck.
Well, you know, the key goal in the end is to be able to drive cross country, you know, because I'd like to be on the West Coast. And my ultimate goal is to pull it off over here to have enough to get over to the west side of things, because that's where I would like to spend my glory days. Like Phil says, being able to ride every day of the year with a nice breeze at 72, you know, I want to be able to say those things.
Yeah. Oh, funny. Well, that is true, though. Because, basically, I do ride every day, too. So, yeah. That's true.
You know, it's kind of hard to get her to agree with me.
Well, I have to be devil's advocate. Now, you know where devil's advocate came from, don't you?
No, but you're going to tell me.
Okay, we're going to go back way, way, way back in the early, early days of the Christian church.
No, look. It's 7 o'clock. My show is coming up.
This is real quick. Way, way back then, they had to have someone that could oppose and argue whatever that they put forth. That was your devil's advocate.
Right.
And so I've got to be one of them.
Okay.
God, life is good that way.
That's true. I think I'm going to let, like I said, I'm going to let Charlie Baker take us out and talk to all you guys Thursday. And don't forget, tomorrow we're going to have Andy McPhee on from the Sons of Anarchy.
Okie doke.
I'm in class.
You what?
I'm in class tomorrow night.
Oh, okay. Well, you can listen to the archive. We'll send you a shout out.
All right. That will work.
Okay.
So we're shutting down for tonight?
Yeah. This is Charlie Baker.
Okay, I love everybody.
All right, you
too. Night, Frankie. Thank you.
Night.
All right.
Saturday morning. each